you're just going to stand there eating that sushi all night? You haven't even looked at my photorealistic macaroni sculpture.
It's Who Arted with Creative Messiah, Amy Ralphini.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Very good. How was you were away last week in Dunedin? That was cold, but good, I hope.
I actually thought, you know, it's not that bad. It's not that cold. It's fine. You know, I could live down here until the next morning when I had to have a shower and the hot water ran out. And I was like, what the hell is going on? But it was good.
You're back though. Who are you for the week?
It's great though, going down and doing an art show in a little art exhibition down in Dunedin, because you suddenly get all the chitter chat of the scene. It's like I know all these things that have been going. It's great.
That's good.
It's like I've got a little home away from home.
Yeah. Oh, sounds great. Sounds brilliant.
Anyway, sorry. Right. Back to Who Arted. Today on Who Arted, we have Tracy Tafiau. Welcome, Tracy.
Kia ora.
Thank you so much for coming up and chatting with us. A writer, a performance poet, filmmaker, a qualified lawyer and practicing artist is very awesome. Part of your youth was spent on Matakana Island in the Hauraki with your grandfather, where one day you decided to brighten up the place by painting murals over the newspaper-covered walls. And so it began, or did it? Can you tell us a little bit more about your beautiful heritage and what got you into art and what inspires you?
Yes, that's true. I did go and paint newspaper on my grandparents' walls, but it was inspired by my grandmother primarily, and she used to make jokes all the time because I couldn't paint to save myself and there was no paper on the island, and I just needed to be creative in some way, so I just thought, oh yeah, I'm going to paint on the newspaper. But actually there's more to the story than that, but it sounds kind of odd, but I used to go to the beach a lot and there was a lot of things to see down there. It was always inspiring, and there was just this long silver, like, it looked like a sword in the sand, I mean in the waterways, you know, like, and it was glinting, and I thought, I've got to go over there. It's like, what is that? And I went over there and there was this incredibly long silver fish.
Wow.
I'd never seen one. My grandfather did tell me that, you know, I should have brought it home for us to eat. But I didn't think of that. But when I was down there, it was just really long and silver. It had this huge eye. And when I looked at it, it sort of said to me to go home and paint it on the newspaper. Like, I'd never thought of painting on newspaper. I just had this incredible experience where I had been thinking, well, I need to be doing something and I can't go to town every day and get stuff. I'm on an island. And then it was sort of all came together looking into the eye of the fish, what I had to do.
Ah, okay.
So I went home immediately, painted this particular fish, not being able to paint like a five-year-old's kind of fish painting, which I'm not really that much more advanced from there now, but it was like the fish.
Oh, I beg to differ, but
it was the fish that, you know, that spoke to me, and then I put it on the newspaper, and once that had happened, it just was like a massive flow. It's like there's an endless amount of newspaper here. There's so many different ways to try and make this fish, improve my fish situation. And I'd put them up on the walls in the house because I recalled that, you know, they're back in the day on the island, but in many Māori communities there wasn't a lot of money, so newspaper was used to wallpaper places. So then I thought, okay, so this is cool. I'm adding to a continuum here, and I'm just painting this fish because I know how to paint a fish now.
That's really quite philosophically deep for a young'un as well, I think. How old were you when you discovered
the fish? I was old, basically. Oh. I had a law degree. I had two children. I was in my 30s. I started late, you know.
I'm imagining the seven-year-old running around.
Honestly, I had nothing to do with that. I failed school CR. I mean, I've been... You know, I never thought of myself as creative. I was at law school. I did a law degree. I'm going to be a lawyer, but no. So you can't...
Oh, I love that.
I think what that really taught me is creativity is essentially part of us.
Yep.
And we need to express it. I mean, at any age, we may never have picked up a pencil or a paintbrush, and many people I've met have come to art very late in their lives and are awesome artists. So it's not an ageist area. Art is one of those things where you can be as old or as little and young as you want to be to begin. So
I love that about art, and I love that it's not ageist. And actually, you really get well, you just get, it's about sharing knowledge. It's about, well, I feel it's about communicating what you know and sharing knowledge and teaching in a way. And you learn so much more as you get older. So art is great for that. So just talking about your artwork visually, Te Puna Ao, the Temple of Potential, consists of, this is how I've interpreted it, and I'm trying to describe it for our listeners. Mm-hmm. Although I do, when I was writing this, I was thinking, there's a positive and negative space that also creates a pattern as well. And so this is
art critic, you.
Yeah, no, I'm so not an art critic. I'm just trying to describe it. Basically, it consists of 12 patterned pointed shafts that emerge glowing pink from the darkness above, pointing towards the floor. These form a circle around a solitary chair in the centre of the work. The space within the outer shafts comprises of a mix of hanging text, patterned shapes, and woven baskets of light, although not a traditional looking basket, more like a basket that would hold a light or a pot of some sort. Either these items are all either catching, refracting, or reflecting the light, with some gently moving in reflection to the human presence. Moving in reaction. In connection with the outer shafts of the work, there are four bright orbs of light sitting upon the floor, marking what could be navigational points. In fact, this whole work holds a bit of a navigational energy. Can you tell us about the symbolism behind the 12 points and the four connecting orbs?
Yes, well, that was awesome to hear you talk about that, and I get it from your perspective. Yes, so there's 12 shafts with the shards of light.
Shards, yeah.
I'm like trying to recreate this feeling that we're in space, we're in a star, we are travelling in a dark space, because essentially that's what the way you see light.
Yeah.
You don't see light unless you're in the dark. So that's I think that is philosophically quite meaningful, that's something to think about.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Because we have this whole thing, this notion, and I get criticised myself for it because, you know, I'm a very positive focused person.
Yeah.
And, you know, people want to talk to you about the shadow, and I'm like, yeah, well, it exists. We've all got that. We're all part of that. So this is what's embraced.
It's
embraced within this concept, right? Yeah, so I'm not trying to leave things out. I'm putting everything in there.
Yeah.
So we've got these 12 shards of light. Of course, 12 is a sacred number in many people's cultures. It's particularly important to me because we have something called the 12 heavens. So in Māori philosophy. So I wanted to use the obvious symbols, right? Because I'm trying to connect to as many people as I can, whether they're Māori or not. So they're the shards of light, and yes, you're right, those four points are actually the south, north, east, west. They're the poles.
I've got a secret.
Did you use your compass?
No, but I heard one of your friends was there when I was there, and I heard her telling her child, those are the navigational, and I was like,
but you know, in the room is a circle, and this it's put together above, and you hang everything off it. So when I hung that up, I just stood under in the centre and used my compass to kind of guide me where are the compass points.
Yeah.
They were exactly in the space of this cross. So I thought,
you'd done them anyway.
Yeah, like
that's
just
great.
By coincidence, apparently coincidence.
That's interesting.
And basically the reason why I highlight those is because in a healing situation, this is what I found out, if you can anchor yourself between the poles, if you know where they are, for instance, we're sitting here now, if we got out our compass, we know exactly where due south, due north, east, west is, and we have a sense of that now, it's physical space, a grounding occurs within us. So when I was born, my grandmother took me outside and she faced me to the different winds, to the different directions. So she went around each direction, faced me, and then that was a common ritual for babies to ground them, locate them, and essentially you've come from the Ida Atua and you're now in the Ida Tangata, and this is how they balance you out between the poles.
That kind of brings me to another question I had about the poles and about magnetism and about energy and all that sort of the power and the essence of using and channeling that energy a bit. I was noticing on Facebook that tomorrow, because it is the last day, it'll be up tomorrow. So anyone that's been toying with going and not moving, now's the time to actually move and go and check this out. And I highly recommend it. It will revive you because it certainly did me. Anyway, I noticed that tomorrow you're doing a healing session in the temple.
Today.
Yes, it is today. Yeah. Recently I visited a healer and they used sound to work on me. And in the past I've seen a crystal healer who would use crystals and with the body's chakras to manipulate the magnetic energy and realign everything. What happens during your sessions?
Oh, well, this is a type of healing which I don't do myself. I think basically in the same way that we're all creative, we're all healers. So it's just the whole idea of the temple is that we have potential. I needed to create it because there seems to be a disjuncture between the physical body and the non-physical body. And I really wanted to do a work that said, no, bring those two things together and be aware of your non-physical body. Because as artists, what we do is we imagine something in our mind and then through a process, we bring it out of ourselves and you get to see it. So what we're doing is we're taking a non-physical idea and we're making it physical. So to me, that shows you that we have these two parts of ourselves that are very tied up in our creativity and they must be made, you know, together in an artwork so that people can feel that. Or be aware of that, at least.
Absolutely, well, because you create something which then you create something physical from your experience, which then I experience, which is non-physical.
Yes.
Well, physical, though.
But you're having a non-physical experience as well.
Yeah.
Because you're feeling all these feelings.
And it's a mix, because it's a mix of what you've put together. So I'm absorbing what you've kind of created, but also I've got my own mix in there as well. And because the chair is in the centre of the work, you feel like it really is all about you. You're in the centre of this, like, big arms of...
That chair was put there, so when people come in and they see it, they actually instinctively want to go sit there.
It makes
them feel like... And a lot of people are not sure if they're allowed to go in there if I'm not there, but a lot of times they come in there and people are sitting in the chair in the dark and like having their experience, which I'm really happy to see. But yeah, the whole idea of being in the centre of something like this is like we have churches and we have marais, and this is a spiritual experience outside of those two places, but that does not exclude those two places. For instance, the design incorporates both of those symbols from both of those houses. And when I see those places, they look to me like a square with a triangle on top. Though that when you just look at the basics shape of that architecture.
Yeah.
And I just drew a circle around those things and put everything within that circle. And I mean, the circle has got a feminine, very strong feminine element to it. And then there's this womb-like thing, and then there's this bigger universal thing. So when you go into the centre and you sit in the chair, and you have all these symbols like swirling around you, you don't even need to know what they mean or why they're there or anything. You just get a sense of something else.
I would love to talk with you more about this. It's just such a wonderful work. I implore people to actually move their butts and go and check it out today. It's on until tomorrow afternoon at the DCT Performance Space at WG210. You can get into the building on May Royal Drive. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us briefly about this today. It was amazing.
Thanks a lot, Amy.
Ooh, I like this.
Trey chic.
Trey cool.
Touché.
Chin chin.
That was Who Arted with Amy Ralphini.